This is Mick Warhurst on ABC Radio.
Making plans to get out of town, travel, it really broadens the mind but also takes us out of our everyday. And whether or not it's choosing California to visit Steinbeck Country or maybe the wily windy moors of Emily Bronte's Yorkshire, of course, we just heard Kate Bush then singing about Heathcliff and Cathy from one of her novels. Fiction can offer up some amazing places for intrepid travellers. Author Andrea Goldsmith is with me. Hello, Andrea.
Hi, Miff.
And I've also got culture vulture Liz Dufray. And both of you are going to explore today with me one of the world's best fiction-inspired locations, or in the case of you there, Andrea, books you've written that your readers have visited the places in which they're set. This is an amazing thing. Yeah, tell me about those places that your readers have visited.
It's really exciting when a book that, well, for example, my most recent book, Invented Lives, opens in Leningrad of 1985, and the number of people who've been to modern-day St. Petersburg or have not been to modern-day St. Petersburg but have read the book and want to go there. And in particular, one of my characters is a mosaicist, and he's working on this extraordinary church in St. Petersburg called the Church on the Spilled Blood, that's all mosaics. And people have read that and they've said they've never thought about mosaics before and they have to go to this church. It's just wonderful.
Amazing. Yeah. Did you, in order to do your research to write this place and this character, did you go or did you study on the internet or look through beautiful books to give you inspiration?
What I do, a lot of my books are partly set outside of Australia. And what I always do is I write a first draft so that I know my characters, they've taken root, and then I go to the location. And what I do is I walk through, for example, modern-day St. Petersburg, but I walk through almost under the skin of my character, Galina, who's the Russian girl who comes from there. I saw what she would see. I smelt what she would smell. Believe me, it was not your normal tourist trek.
No, I can't imagine. Liz, I'm going to bring you in. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Now, Liz, you have done a little bit of, I guess you could call it, literary tourism, haven't you?
Yeah. Look, you know that I'm a nerd, and I hope that's why you keep having me back.
that's why we love you.
No. Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, and yeah, I've been very guilty of this, not just with fiction as in writing, but although I have done some of that. So when I was in London the first time, I had to go to Baker Street to see where Sherlock Holmes lived.
Oh, see, I would have gone for the Jerry Rafferty song.
Oh, yeah, well, sure. I mean, it's all there. And what's hilarious about Sherlock Holmes is, of course, Sherlock's not real, but there's the big plaques to him everywhere. There's a massive statue when you get out of the tube station. There's, like, Sherlock Holmes, like, little shadowy, busty things when you get out of the tube station. It's incredible. So, you know, and, I mean, now that there's all the reboots and stuff, a lot of stuff has been set in Baker Street, and so you can see, you know, modern Baker Street. But I just had to do that. I absolutely had to do that. And I can remember when I was little too, I'm from Sydney, and playing Beady Bow, the Ruth Park book, which was set in colonial, in the Rocks in Sydney. It's sort of the turn of the 18th to 19th century, I think. And I can remember doing that too. I think we even did that as part of school. We went looking around to see, you know, to see the little places that were referenced in that book. But after that, then, I mean, I can't help myself because I'm such a popular music nerd apart from anything else. I mean, you know, I had to go to Abbey Road. I had to be that guy that stopped traffic. There was no question. And nobody cares that it's not the same, you know, that it's not the same zebra crossing anymore. It's actually up the road. Nobody cares.
No.
You go and do it anyway, you know. So there's been lots of those. I went and sang Chelsea Hotel out the front of the Chelsea Hotel in New York, and much to the horror of the people I was with. I had to go and give my regards to Broadway again in the same trip. Again, broke into song. Luckily, it's too loud so nobody can hear you, you know, but I've had to do all of that. I just can't help myself.
Liz Dufray, you are one of us. back to you then, Andrea. How important is it then to get it right? If you are putting a character in a place, how important is it to be utterly believable? Do people judge you on your fictionalised account of a place?
Oh, absolutely. There is an army of people who need to get a life, and they spend time going through your book and finding out exactly what is wrong. So you really do need to make sure that you've got it right. But the thing is, the place for fiction, the place is in service to the story and the character. So, for example, in St. Petersburg, I was there one time in winter and I saw ducks pecking around on the iced canal, pecking amongst the rubbish. And I thought, I can use that. A normal tourist probably wouldn't see it. But what it does is those sorts of things actually add authenticity to a novel. What you want is when you're reading a novel, you're doing mental travelling. If the novel's working properly, it's mental travelling, and you're right inside it. I mean, I know, I had to smile at Liz, what she wanted to revisit from her childhood reading. I spent years searching for the faraway tree. I did. And I was desperate to find that secret garden that Frances Burnett talked about. Believe me, families were there.
Did you look at wardrobes really strangely too, just to be sure that there was nobody inside them, no lions, no witches?
No, because that was not one of my childhood books. But believe me, if it had been, yes, of course I would. I did. I was very, very much taken by Elizabeth Googe's Little White Horse. I wanted to know that unicorn. And yeah. I actually imagined myself in those places that came to me in the books, and they were not made up. They were real. And that's mental travelling.
That is incredible, isn't it? And I guess that fantasy element that comes from reading fiction as a child, we get to enact this as an adult if we choose to. So maybe that's part of the reason why we try and chase down these places of literature, because we can, whereas something like The Magic Faraway Tree by Enid Blyton, it was always a fantasy.
Really? I'm still searching for it, Niff.
But people bring that to life too. Like I did last year with my family, we were in Hamilton, New Zealand for a conference, and there was a bunch of us lovely pop culture nerd academic people who all went on a tour, the Lord of the Rings tour. You know, so even though that's not really Middle Earth, that's kind of Middle Earth now,
still is,
if you know
looks
what I
like
mean.
It.
For sure. And that was just, I mean, even though we are literally trained to know that this was a set, it was all put together, you know, it's all Peter Jackson and smoke and mirrors and stuff, it was still just, there was still an element of the, I want to say the magic about it. That doesn't sound very academic. Don't throw me out.
That's
but,
fine,
you know, Liz. It was just fantastic. It was so much fun.
That was the very academic voice of Liz Dufray there, Senior Lecturer in Communications at the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences at UTS. Andrea Goldsmith as well is with us, who's an author, and most recent book is Invented Lives. Loads of messages coming through on the text line, 0467 921 222. Someone's written, I went to Oxford because of Alice in Wonderland, Narnia and His Dark Materials, York to see the Bronte Parsonage, and many more around the UK in 2008. Oh, what a delightful journey that would have been. This one, I hitchhiked to Macarthur because Kevin Bloody Wilson mentions it in Living Next Door to Alan.
They're my people, Tom. That's amazing.
Macarthur, I should say. Tom, I wasn't sure what I was getting into as I was reading that text. It could have been anything if it's Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Yeah.
On the way, the cop in Mount Magnet clearly wanted my girlfriend and I out of town, so generously drove us 10 kilometres up the road and left us there in the middle of WA's Try Nothing. Mm. Oh, there's a story, Tom. Someone else has written, I am going to Northern Iceland in November to walk the path of Agnes Magnusdottir, I think is how you say it, I'm not entirely sure, who is a real-life character from the book Burial Rites, written by Hannah Kent. I'm so excited. Aren't these lovely journeys?
I went to Iceland, but again, as an author, what I wanted to do was, I went in winter, of course, and it was to soak up the atmosphere for a future book. And I'll use it more, I think, as metaphor, but I still hope that people will read it and want to go to Iceland as they have after Hannah Kent's burial rites.
That's fantastic. Mm. John on the phone. Hello, John. Oh, we just lost him. He's gone. Apparently he has followed the A.A. Milne route, Winnie the Pooh. So hopefully we can get
London
him back.
London Zoo, would that be? London Zoo?
Probably would be. So when you go to Iceland and you have a character in mind, you've already written something, obviously. Can you claim that on tax as part of an author's?
If someone's got to do this job. And yes, all writing-related travel.
I love this.
Well, listen, there's still time.
There is.
I'll tell you, I'm going to Shetland in December, the Shetland Islands in December. Not sure what it is. I mean, what's coming through here is something about the imagination, and the imagination does work in mysterious ways. And I've learned to trust that it knows what it's doing when rationally I don't. So there's something about Shetland. I've got to go.
You've got to go. Do you think this idea of literary tourism, though, has changed, given now we have these places at our fingertips, or pretty much at the end of our eyeballs? Google Maps, for instance. Quite often now, if I'm interviewing somebody and they come from a small country town, quite often I'll take myself down the main street of that small country town to get an idea of how they grew up.
But you can't smell it.
Yeah, good point.
And you can't hear it, and you can't trip over the cracks in the pavement, and it's those sorts of things that lend authenticity to environments. Many, many years ago, like 20 years ago, I was asked to conduct a literary tour of England, going through, Liz, a lot of those books that you mentioned, down to Hardy Country, up to where the Brontes were, to the lakes and so on. It was amazing the number of people who wanted to tread in those footsteps and read the poems and the novels once we got there. Very, very rich and vibrant and invigorating experience.
I think that's true too of if we talk nonfiction. So again, when I go to conferences and stuff, I went to a popular music conference, gosh, it'd be better part of 10 years ago now, that was in London. I'm sorry, in Liverpool, where the Liverpool Institute for Popular Music is, like the big academic hub in the world. And the number of us who, you know, again, arguably should have known better, but were also professionals who wanted to go to the cavern and wanted to go and do those Beatles tours just to, you're right, to smell it and to sniff it. And I know not all of this work is fiction, although a lot of the Beatles work was. It was just about getting a sense of how being in that place might inspire something, I think, is really what got us, you know. And, I mean, shamelessly, there is something lovely about being able to put your hand on the hand of, you know, we went and put our hands on what should have been Eleanor Rigby's grave, you know, in the graveyard that's supposedly next to the church where John and Paul first started playing guitar together. And it's just that strange little thing of, oh, somehow we're in the same orbit. You know what I mean? It's fun apart from anything else, you know?
Of course, of course. And it's a great story as well. Quite often, if you go to every major tourist spot, everyone else has been there and there's no real reason other than you just want to see it. Whereas if there's a story behind it, there's something that's a little richer to grasp onto,
I think. And it's also part of your story. Because it's your experience with the Beatles, or it's your reading of the Brontes. I mean, the reader, every reader has a different reading. Mm-hmm. So I love the idea of touching the ground or touching the grave or something. And I have no problems about mystery and magic at all, but then I'm not an academic.
Liz Dufresne is with me and Andrea Goldsmith as well. We're discussing literary tourism. And speaking of the Bronte journey, I've got someone who has actually travelled the Bronte territory on the phone right now, author Sandra Lee Price. Hello, Sandra.
Hi, Miss. How are you? Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Sandra, where did your trip take you?
Well, I was a 21-year-old backpacker following my literary arts background from university, and obviously the Brontes were straight on the map. This is in the days before Google Maps, the days before internet looking. It was just a let's go, backpack, friends, Bronte poems, and off we went. So,
wow, that's amazing. What did it give you in terms of your understanding of the books?
Well, it kind of, now I look back at it being older, there's two things that kind of really strike me is that as a young person, I really was, you know, enamoured by the literature and the space. And again, listening to your conversation about walking those same footsteps. And I had the wonderful
looks like we've just lost her, sadly. We'll go to Lisa. Where did you go?
Hello, ladies. Well, actually, there's a couple of places I wanted to mention. Locally, Hanging Rock, Searching for the Land.
Of course, yes.
And every time I go there, even though I know it wasn't true,
I know.
It's like you can hear the pan flutes and you sort of walking around. Exactly. So there's always calling out for Miranda and looking in crevices.
It'll never get old. I love that one, Lisa. Where else?
And also, look, just similar to the last call, when I was a backpacker many years ago, having read lots of Jane Austen novels and seen the movies, you know, just sort of went off on my own trail and went to Winchester Cathedral, where her resting place. I can't remember where she was born. It was
Chawton. Chawton was where she lived, and that's where the Austen house is.
That's right, and I saw the outside of the house, but also just, you know, generally around England and going to Bath, and you know, you're sort of like, you walk around imagining you're wearing a bonnet and, you know, that sort of style gown and everything. So it just, you really, it just fills in all the other senses.
Yeah, but it also, as I think, as you mentioned too, Andrea, it taps into that fantasy element, doesn't it? We put ourselves in the story in a way.
I have to say, I've been to Bath a couple of times, and I really think that I see Bath through the scrim of Jane Austen. Yeah. I don't think I see today's Bath.
No. Oh, that's wonderful. So many messages are coming through, and this one, I'm just going to put a little bit of music up for our previous caller, Lisa, because...
Oh, dear.
Just sit with this for a minute. Still creeps me out. But we've managed to get Sandra Lee Price back, who was the author who travelled the Bronte territory. We were talking about when you were a backpacker and what it sort of, how you see that impact of doing this tour now.
Well, just when I was younger, I was reading a poem. Emily Bronte has a wonderful book about a poem about stars. And being kind of, you know, following a Let's Go book, and the bed and breakfast was closed because it was the middle of winter, and just, I remember this vivid sensation of looking up and going, oh, my God, they're Emily Bronte stars. And it gave me the shivers. Yeah. So I really felt that I was experiencing the book and the words then. But now being older and looking back at that 21-year-old self, I kind of think more about Emily Bronte, the writer, and the domesticity of her life and how she and her sisters managed to create in this space where they're so limited. So obviously age changes these tours and these experiences of being travel and literature, because yourself changes, so you look at them a little bit differently, but still rather dear and precious to me.
Absolutely. Did doing this tour set you on the price to become a writer, Sandra?
I think it probably did, because I also went to Ireland and did a lot of stalking around there, and I did a bit of time at the Abbey Theatre in Ireland, and I remember my university lecturer saying to me, oh, you're just going to commune with the ghost of Yeats.
nothing wrong with that. You can go and have a beer with Oscar Wilde while you're there. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's right. And it just kind of made me feel like that, yes, I kept a journal, and I probably was one of the longest things I'd ever written. Just that kind of putting yourself in someone else's shoes, putting yourself in those places, it kind of ends up being a dialogue between the writer, the self, and place, and those other writers. So it's a wonderful way to kind of get in touch with the spirit of those writers, to try and encourage your own little baby writer self to come out.
Yeah. Andrea Goldsmith, as an author, do you see it as that, as a dialogue between you and the reader?
Yes. I think there's lots of dialogues that... going on. I mean, I think that there is no greater intimacy than the act of reading. There you are for hours at a time, sitting quietly by yourself in the room, and your imagination is actually connecting with the imagination, the story that's coming off the book. I mean, I think it's a great intimacy, but I also think it's a really, really fertile one. So whilst I might, as a writer, think I'm having some sort of dialogue with my reader, the reader is going to make of the story something different. And that's always something that surprised me, that I'll meet with a reader who's read one of my books and they'll come up with something I hadn't thought of. Sometimes I think it's very odd, but mostly I find it utterly captivating.
Yeah. So many great messages too before we wind up. This from Jane from Wattle Flat said, standing next to Wordsworth's Dove Cottage, listening to lines composed above Tintern Abbey, I was in floods of tears. Good on you, Jane. Yep. Claire travelled around Paris while reading The Da Vinci Code, and it just brought the book to life in so many ways, being able to visit the many artworks and locations. My son read Harry Potter, says another texter, four times each from the age of 13. I'm sure it fueled his obsession with studying there. Oh, wow. About to complete his final year in Oxford. It really does set off those dreams. That's fabulous. This one from Louise in Ballarat has said, I dragged my boyfriend of the time, later my husband, in brackets, glad it worked out, to Prince Edward Island to see Anne of Green Gables land 25 years ago. He must have loved you, Louise. Well, we were travelling around the world and it was a detour I couldn't pass up. I loved it.
Oh, what a keeper that man is. That's
he
a
is
test.
A keeper. That is a test. Oh, look, it's been a wonderful conversation, all of you. Thank you so much, Liz and Andrea.
Thank you.
And so many brilliant texts are coming through too. I will read out a couple more because it's just such a lovely idea. And the idea that it's not just about going to see something or to see through the character's eyes and the author's eyes, the fact that it can set off some sort of magic or fantasy in you is just a wonderful way of looking at it. Beautiful stuff. Thanks, Liz. Thanks, Andrea.
Thanks.